Back on Downtown, time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joins us. Hello there, Eric.
Richard, what are the Giants doing?
Oh,
what are they doing to me?
Going nowhere fast.
They almost pulled one out. I mean, what are you going to do? If you're going to lose, just lose.
And in the strangest game, did you see they set some sort of weird NFL history by being the first team ever to score three touchdowns in a game, not give up a touchdown, and still lose?
My boys.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as they're still figuring out how to lose, because Travis Hunter, hey, he's not going to be there at pick six.
Oof.
Hey, come on, guys. What are we doing?
And I don't know, Brian Daboll, maybe it's a good idea to have a backup kicker. I'm just thinking.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I don't even... I know that I would get blasted if this were, like, you know, New York Sports Radio or whatever. But this is probably the simplest of all takes. Why does the punter not kick and the kicker not punt?
Yeah. Wouldn't that make sense?
What are we doing? What, you got all this time to practice punting? Like, come on.
Yeesh.
Take a couple of kicks. Figure it out.
But I, you know, as rough as it was, though, then you could be a Cowboys fan.
Well, that wouldn't happen, Richard.
No, I know. I know, because
we're
both right-thinking people. But, I enjoyed seeing that final score.
Oh, glory. The only thing better than the Redskins losing, which they didn't, I don't know. I'm so conflicted. Like, I don't even know what I want anymore in my own division.
Like, right.
Do I want the Cowboys to win? Do I want them to lose? Do I want the Redskins to win? I think I want them all to win. So so you get no draft picks and you guys all implode from overpaying people, and I don't know. Long-term game.
Yes.
Long game. Anyway, listen. We're here to talk about another long game today. That is the California wine scene. We are already in mid-September. I don't know how this happened. It's not my fault, but I apologize anyway. So we're going to kind of zip through a lot of the world here. So let's talk about California, which, of course, speaking of long game, was long under vine. And in fact, as you know, we'll get to it a little bit more next week, but. It was one of the places where there really wasn't a phylloxera problem like there was on the East Coast. So vines have been kind of flourishing in California for a very long, long, long time. However, California wasn't a really important wine scene, if you will, until the late 70s. So we'll talk a little bit about that today and how that all happened. California, I know... is sort of it's like Chianti when you talk about Italy. Like, California is full of wine regions, but most people haven't been to most of them. California is just such a unbelievably vast, fertile region. I mean, I this sounds like simplistic, but I'm just going to sort of state the obvious. Like, it's immense. It has every sort of terroir you could imagine, and an awful lot of it is under vine, but the places that people have been, of course, essentially, just like, again, Chianti centers around, you know, or is just south of Florence, San Francisco is sort of the gateway to the more visited and famed places, Napa, Sonoma, etc. But there really is, there's wine being grown basically just around San Diego to the south, and then ultimately, if you go even further south over the border, there is wine being grown up and down Baja as well. But so there's there's a vast area, and then you kind of get up to as I said, San Francisco. Above that is Sonoma, Napa, Alexander, the North Coast, and then you sort of have a break until you get to Oregon, and you get to the Rogue River, the Willamette Valley, et cetera, which we'll, again, talk about in a little while. But the places that people know, perhaps not coincidentally, are also the places that produce the most expensive wines from California, but it's important to remember that California produces an awful lot of wine under a lot of different appellations. That is, you know, the delimited area, including a lot of wine simply labeled California, so that people can choose from that vast swath of area to find whatever works in that particular vintage. Because, of course, I don't need to tell people that California and climate change are like oil and water. It's not really going great for varying places that maybe, say, are on fire or have massive droughts or have flash flooding or all these sorts of things. So wine growers in California, like everywhere, face really unique challenges. And so if you're a wine maker, especially some of the larger concerns, it's easy to have sort of the entirety of California to make wines from. So there's all that in a nutshell. So how did California get famous? As I said, it's been around forever, ever. But really what started to change things for the better is that a lot of immigrants from the old world, that is places in Europe, especially Eastern Europe and Central Europe, which were volatile, to say the least, politically and in the earlier parts of the 20th century. And so a lot of people came to America seeking a better life, and a lot of those folks went west, and people with wine-growing acumen took up that trade there. So you had a lot of old-school knowledge with, again, this vast territory where, especially back then, you could probably, you know, sort of pick wherever you wanted to plant vines and pick, essentially. So that happened for a couple decades, that there was a lot of intelligent wine growing with the grapes that we all know and love, right? Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Chardonnay. Again, brought from the places in Europe that these people knew and could get clippings. So you're getting, you know, Bordelais, Cabernet, Merlot, Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays from Burgundy, etc. And in 1976, this is the famed Tasting of Paris, or Judgment of Paris, rather, Tasting of Paris. It was a tasting. So a guy named Steve Spurrier, who was a British guy, and he had a wine shop just off around the corner from the Wall Street of Paris. And the Parisian financiers of the day apparently really loved going into this place and talking to this British gentleman about these very nice small production wines. And he got it into his head. He also, by the way, had a wine school on the second floor of his store, which I think is just awesome. I think, you know, the British, at the, you know, up until, well, frankly, climate change helped them, they didn't grow grapes, but all the, like, wine degrees and all the education comes from Great Britain, despite the fact that there's, like, no wine-growing tradition. Odd subnote there. But anyway, so he would teach all these wealthy French financiers about wine and sell them wine. And he got into his head to go to California and source wines. So he went around to places, now famed places like Chateau Montelena, Stag's Leap, etc., and bought a couple bottles of theirs and took it back with him to Paris. And they had a really big tasting with all French judges, you know, the leading critics of the time, and they got together in a grand ballroom and did this. And long story short, too late. The French judges picked the American wines. In fact, they were fooled into at one point, famously thinking that they were having, you know, a French wine, when in fact they were having an American wine. And they said, "Ah, finally back to France," and they were in fact wrong. So this judgment of Paris again, 1976, just absolutely destroyed the world of wine. You know. In a way that the world of wine would be shocked, you know. It was a stately and sort of modest affair, but, you know, slow gasps. But, yeah, so the Stag's Leap Cabernet and the Chateau Montelena Chardonnay were the winners of this particular tasting, and it's part of the reason that today the Napa region is so famous. And again, that plus the fact that it's really on a main tourist route north of San Francisco certainly helps. But that's the deal there. Really quickly, before I go, and I will be back next week, by the way, to talk about sort of the origins of the California wine scene, I wanted to say I have a new YouTube video series, also dubbed Message in the Bottle. It's YouTube at Bangor Wine. Please go subscribe.
It's excellent, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I sort of figured not everyone in the world is intelligent enough and sophisticated enough to necessarily listen to a radio show as fine as this one, but I've been told that other people interact with the world on different wavelengths, so I'm trying to get... I'm at least 10 years behind at this point, but I'm now on Instagram and all that. So yeah, please go there. And also, my band is reunited, and we have a gig at the Orono Brewing Company on the 11th of October. Please come out and support some old men doing our best to shake your booty.
That's why we played the birds right? coming in. That's why we played. So you want to be a rock and roll star?
I so badly do. but I like Mick Jagger need like a masseuse before and after, and I don't have that, so I got to work on that. Anyway, come on out anyway.
That sounds like a plan. Eric, thank you as always. Hope your week goes well. We'll check in again next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.